Welcome to Reboot with Dr. Arasi Maran. I'm Dr. Arasi, interventional cardiologist, and this is your one-stop shop for all science-related healthy aging, health issues, or whatever science-backed tips you need to go. So today we have a very interesting guest and also a very interesting topic. This is a little bit a topic which is not in my comfort zone, but I have the best expert to kind of help me with that. So today with me, I have Dr. Jayanthi Ravichandran. Welcome to the show, Jayanthi. Jayanthi and I, of course, like most of my guests, go a long, long way from our intern years back in Madras Medical College. Dr. Jayanthi is a board-certified plastic surgeon and does a lot of aesthetic work. She's also the founder and CEO of Tamira Aesthetics based in Chennai. She has done revolutionary work in the field of plastic surgery and aesthetic surgery. Today, we are going to talk about healthy aging or empowered aging, however you want to call it. Jayanthi, welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure connecting with you again, Arasi. Thinking back on the days, I know how we were during school days. And when we connected back after my master's, I remember what you asked me. Are they giving you an MS course or a slimming course? So I know we all are really focused, or we would like to maintain ourselves at the best version of what we could.
Yes.
And today everybody would want to know how in a healthy way or in the correct scientific way we can maintain ourselves or age gracefully.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, honest to God, the reason, you know, one of the biggest reasons why I thought of you as a guest today and invited you is this big hoopla right now after Kris Jenner has had a facelift and she looks like a completely different person. She has literally reversed aged and, you know, we know the surgeon's name now, et cetera, et cetera. But even then, I wanted to go through the steps, go through the phases of, you know, how do we get there and how do we do that if we have the choice to. And that's what the discussion is going to be focused on.
Lovely. So Kris Jenner is there out in the, her facelift or her current appearance is there on the media.
Yeah.
Why everybody is talking about it is because she looks very, whatever transformation that's been offered to her, very natural and unlike at some situations, they look really pulled up, tightened, probably more like a mask face.
Yes.
This is very natural. And also, she's very transparent about whatever she's done. And she feels, you know, aging gracefully. And everybody knows it's out in the media that she's done it for the second time.
Absolutely.
The facelift. And that is why one is the transparency and the natural look is why it's spoken about so much. Now, going through the steps today for her, if you have to date back about 2-3 decades,
mm-hmm.
At that point of time, the entire aesthetic, I would say aesthetic surgery or aesthetic medicine, entire spectrum was more, if you want, radical, predicted results,
mm-hmm,
it was
mm-hmm.
more towards surgical.
Okay.
So obviously facelift was the ultimate for a face and neck rejuvenation post, let's say, 45, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the skin types are different. So when we look at the Caucasian skin, or type 1 to 3 Fitzpatrick skin type, basically, they tend to burn easily,
mm-hmm.
and tan less.
Yes.
And they are at an advantage of less visible scars compared
okay.
to the Asian skin, where we tan more, burn less.
Yes.
But the scar is really visible many times. It gets hyperpigmented, hypertrophic. So all a dark skin type. So they, it's been very different when you talk about these procedures in different, I would say, not just the skin types, in different parts of the world.
That's a great point, because I'm sure the number of referrals for facelifts must have gone up after everyone has seen Kris Jenner's facelift. But it's important to know who would benefit out of it and who would not benefit and who's going to scar more, etc. So let's go back and can you deep dive or break down this Fitzpatrick skin types? You said type 1 to 3, etc. Yeah. Break that down.
Yeah, so Fitzpatrick's, we have six skin types. So 1 to 3 is usually burn more and tan less because their melanin content is different, whereas 4, 5, 6, the melanin content is different here, and we tan more and burn less.
Is it okay to kind of say the 1 to 4 is more of a Caucasian skin type?
I would say 1 to 3.
1 to 3 is Caucasian, and 4, 5, 6 is more the
Asian,
South Asian, Middle Eastern skin types. Okay.
So 5, 6 is more towards the African.
Okay.
If you want to categorize
darker,
it.
Much more type. Darker skin types.
So each have their advantage as well as the disadvantage. It's not just the skin types, but our ethnicity as such also gives certain advantage and disadvantage.
Okay.
So apart from just the skin, because of the changes, they are less, if you look most at the Caucasian skin, they age faster.
Yes,
so
definitely.
Appearance of wrinkles or, more, I would say, volume, less.
Yes.
Yeah, less volume, more wrinkled face. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the Asian side, we are actually opposite of that.
Yes.
The wrinkles starts appearing later for us because we have more support tissue in the skin. Our dermis is thicker.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we have more voluminous face. So most of us, if you see the lower face and neck is heavy.
Yes.
So that is when all these different types of procedures today, I would say the entire aesthetic medicine surgical space is going through a change because we are moving more and more towards energy-based device, minimally invasive procedures versus a very radical procedure.
Yes.
The number of seekers for these procedures are on the rise. And of course, we want to have less downtime, less risk, less complication, but more results.
Absolutely. I mean, we always want more.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. So that is the transformation that we're going through.
So let's go through, it's really surprising. There was a time when we were, in our 20s and 30s, facelift was like considered the ultimate procedure.
Absolutely.
Like what you said. And usually people would think, oh, I get one facelift in my lifetime.
Absolutely.
And now, like with this Kris Jenner, she's done two facelifts and the second one was even better than the first one. So I think that's why everyone is like, whoa.
Correct.
Because we've seen other people, Joan Collins, etc., their face did not look natural. It looked like a, very pulled and very, very artificial. You can make out that is not the right, that's not the way you would want to look. It wasn't aging gracefully, as you put it. What is the general downtime for a facelift?
So talking about in specific Kris Jenner, so whatever I have read from the medical release or the press release or the media is probably there are two types of facelift. The first one less radical, and this time it's probably a deep pay plain facelift.
Facelift,
so
yes.
There are usually we call SMAS facelifts related, that is a superficial muscular aponeurotic system. Tightening it gives a lifted appearance.
So that is the system below your face and just your subcutaneous, the next level
so
of...
So we have fat, skin, and then we have fat, and then in the face, we have what is called superficial muscular upper neurotic system because it's all one composite unit in the face.
Mm-hmm.
We have fat, we have muscle planes, nerves going through that, blood vessels and ligaments. So we have these retaining ligaments which holds tissues in specific places until they become loose. So the moment they become loose, there is some amount of descent, but because they are retaining them, the whole unit does not move down, but specific areas move down.
Mm.
That's why we get specific folds like the nasolabial fold or the marionette fold or the jowling, we call it, because you have a descent and the jawline definition is gone. And of course, when these retaining ligaments becomes loose, we have even descent of some salivary, like submandibular salivary gland, that also descends. Now we have gone one step more at the recent ISAPS. I just returned from Olympiad, where we are looking at people who are even addressing parotids.
Oh, wow. Because you do see age-related parotid enlargement.
Absolutely.
For the listeners, parotid's gland is a salivary gland. It produces saliva. It just sits below your ear lobule. And you can see enlargement of it. And you can see the ear lobule getting lifted up. And
so in our ethnicity, you would say that's when you have a very bulky low face and neck. So even that, removal of that is now...
That's a big surgical procedure.
Yeah, so why, I mean, even olden days, it's not that we one facelift will give us the reversed look throughout our entire life, but it was more like we probably we thought we could not do a second facelift.
Yes.
But today it's different. We know that if when we do a facelift, a normal facelift probably could last anywhere from 5 to 7 years or so, and if you do a deep plane facelift, the results could last longer, 10 to 15 years.
Okay.
But none of it is like entire lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, we are also living longer, right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, absolutely. Earlier, you know, life expectancy, 55, 65, we might be the first generation of people. If we live right, we could easily hit 90s and 100s, or even, you know, we might hit there.
Yeah, because also the longevity, all
medicine
of it,
is,
you're
yes,
saying,
absolutely.
It's a, you see regenerative medicine, longevity, medicine is going to, it's going to hit a big way in the next decade, is what I feel. And of course, we may live longer. And obviously,
and I hope we live healthier.
Yeah, of course. So the reason why somebody would do this is, as youthful as we feel inside, we also want to reflect that outside.
Yeah.
So that's, it's as simple as that. So, but this particular thought is actually making people look towards the aesthetic procedures much earlier in life.
Yeah, oh, I don't know about that, but it depends on whether you're going to convince me or not about the downtime and the risks. And, you know, let me talk about what I know as surgical procedures. I know the first time you have open heart surgery, it's X amount of 10% risk of major complication. But if you go for a second open heart surgery, the complication risk outweighs the benefits, and most surgeons don't offer it. But here you guys are going into the face like as if it's no big deal and doing a second facelift, a deep plane facelift. Is the complication rates not higher when you go for a second procedure?
The answer is yes, but I know you, so I know people, you might have stented somebody before,
you're stenting
again. Why are we doing that? Because it, like every other medical procedures,
the skills comes.
The skill, it is very, very surgeon dependent. You need to be extremely skilled at it. Yes, you can have nerve damage. You can have a hematoma.
Yes.
You can have asymmetry between the two sides of the face, because in the deep facelift, you're pulling the entire muscle and the system as a composite unit. And so you need to do it symmetrically on both sides.
Okay.
And you have to take care of the nerves. And of course, you have to not allow excessive tension on the suture line. Very important.
Important.
Because what eventually everybody sees is the scar.
Yes.
So with some skin, the scar usually heals better, but it may not be the same all skin types. So these procedures to be done by a skilled surgeon, and for the surgeon to become skilled, you have to do multiple procedures.
Yeah.
Correct choice of patient. And more important is for the patients to understand the downtime expectation.
Yes.
So also because it's not that it can be, we cannot get even after a facelift, the entire appearance, it's because even the bone undergoes changes with age. So we're not going to make someone look like how they were in their 20s. That's not the goal of a facelift. It's the goal of the facelift is to make you appropriate to that age, but that what is that appropriateness?
It's very subjective. It's very subjective.
So Kris Jenner looks very today. We are not talking about whether she looks 20 in her 20s or 30s. That's not the discussion.
The discussion
is she looks very graceful.
Yes, she looks very graceful. So let me flip it the other way around. Why even get a regular facelift? Why not just get the deep plane facelift if it's lasting longer?
Okay, so like I mentioned, deep plane facelift comes with its own risks of complication and scarring, asymmetry. And, will last to 10 to 15 years. And so if somebody opts for it at 50, at 65, now repeating the deep facelift becomes more risky.
Okay. I got it. So if I'm kind of getting this right, the regular standard facelift where you get the incision in front of your lobule is your 40s, 50s kind of a procedure, and maybe in your later 60s or 70s might be the second deep plane facelift?
No, so the incision is the same for both.
Oh, okay.
So it is only how the procedure is done below the skin, right? So whether you're going to do this facelift at what age is what is going to decide now. Like I mentioned, with more and more non-surgical procedures, energy-based devices that are coming into the market, probably the age at which somebody is going to come for facelift is going to
be pushed far.
At that time, probably deep plane facelift will be the best possible option for them.
And so you may not need two facelifts and you might preserve yourself.
Absolutely.
I got it.
Is where we are heading towards. So at 20s, people, we start doing some injectables and toxins. Then we start adding some energy devices. So we are maintaining the collagen remodulation, and we are also controlling the descent of tissues. And probably if we do that right, we can push the requirement for facelift. So because why do eventually we need facelift is if there is significant skin laxity and we cannot tighten them with non-surgical device, or you cannot lift without a bunching of that skin, we have to cut and remove.
Yes.
So anyway, that has to be done at some point. So the longer you push that, and at that point you do it more aggressively, but one time, probably the results are going to last longer and it's going to be more natural and better.
Fantastic. So now let's come to what are the healthy habits a 20-year-old or 30-year-old can kind of inculcate in their daily lives to have the healthy aging we're talking about.
This is a very, very interesting topic, and I really need to thank you for giving me an opportunity, because I actually tell this to every patient of mine, and this is a place where I can talk and tell you the one important thing is sleeping on time. Many of them think that it's okay to sleep 8 hours. So it's not, I mean, either 8 hours from whenever they sleep. Mm-hmm. Probably if I sleep at 2, I will sleep for 8 hours after that. Publications that are coming in, research, we all know that the melatonin starts secreting once the eyes do not see any light.
Yes.
With modernization, now we are exposed to light, indoor lights, blue lights from devices and all of that. And probably if we are going to sleep 12, 1, and until then we are constantly exposed to this light.
Yes.
And there is constant firing, and probably melatonin secreting enough.
Mm-hmm.
So based on whatever medical literature says, melatonin secretion, the amount it is secreted, the duration for which it is secreted, actually helps the other cells to repair during that time.
Interesting.
So probably most of the what today we think as genetic disorders probably are usually associated with lifestyle.
Yeah.
So aging as well if you ask me, what is one thing that everybody should do if they want to age gracefully is to have a good lifestyle. When I mean good lifestyle is to sleep on time and eat on time and eat healthy, because another interesting topic I would like to tell you is one of our plastic surgeons, he was actually speaking on his golden oration in a recent Congress, and he was talking about how he changed his lifestyle when he felt that he was just operating and he had a lot of medical issues. So in that oration, he shared his experience, and what he mentioned is, he said, I ate the same food at same time
for
4 to 6 weeks, and I experienced my gut actually, the leaky gut and all of that got corrected. The moment that got corrected, all the other metabolic diseases that he actually was going through also reversed.
Absolutely. I was literally about to say, from what you're telling me, with our current lifestyles, we are doomed. We should go ahead and bank money for our...
Absolutely.
No. But even then, I think, you know, with this whole reboot and everything, we have taken steps to kind of simplify our lifestyles or our habits. And your friend, your colleague who mentioned eating the same thing and not making food a big drama process, eating the same breakfast, same lunch, same dinner. So you're not wasting mental energy thinking about
Absolutely.
That. And it's quick, fast, and you know, you
because
move on.
Because the gut understands that at specific time, it is going to get specific food.
Yes.
So actually it helps to correct it. That's mm-hmm. exactly what he mentioned. And I mean, I took his words because he experienced it and he shared it in the oration. And I've been telling this over the last 2-3 months. And patients come back telling me that in 6 weeks, I've lost 10 kilos simply just following this.
Yes.
I start at 8:30 when the sun rises, and I mean, morning, and I finish by 6:30.
Yeah.
I take 3 meals, standard meals, no extra addition. Keep it as simple as possible. The same food, no complicating. And when the gut knows that I'm going to get this food at this time, it resets automatically.
Yeah.
Earlier we thought, when we were talking about skin and hair, and we spoke about if you have anemia, we know anemia, low blood, hemoglobin, and we just load patients with iron tablets.
Tablets, yes.
Today, very clear science papers, they say if you put too much of iron, the gut does not absorb this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like when somebody has low hemoglobin, give them loads of iron tablets, also tell them to eat iron-rich food at the same time. It doesn't work that way anymore. So there are very clear understanding that good lifestyle, sleep
yes.
on time, eat healthy, eat on time. And this actually helps to improve the skin and hair and your
Absolutely.
Overall you know, collagen remodelation, everything. And suppose our work demands sleeping late, then obviously I would advise taking supplements. So melatonin supplements to understand till we reverse the gut. So that's what I encourage everybody. See, just a thought also, this was shared by one of the doctors who actually in one study, he said he took a group of professionals, doctors, engineers, lawyers, all groups of professionals, different population, and studied the pattern baldness.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one group which did not have pattern baldness. Can mm-hmm. you guess?
I can't guess. What is
so he felt those who were living in the street, the beggars, actually did not have pattern baldness.
Are you serious?
Really?
Wow.
So after that, I came back and I started to look at these documentaries
uh-huh.
That are available from the untouched tribal documentaries. And
yes.
I couldn't find pattern baldness there as well.
Interesting. So this, are you saying baldness is not hormonal and it is more lifestyle mediated? That'll be
the
wild.
Lifestyle is causing hormonal change
changes,
and it is causing epigenetic change and it is causing baldness.
Wow. That's wild. That's really wild.
Really, because if you see them, you will see that they don't have all these pattern baldness mm-hmm. and they're living long years.
Yes.
So
yes.
no diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can see them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So either they found their own preventive medicine or they don't have it.
Yeah.
So a healthy lifestyle is what we need to adopt in early 20s. And also, of course, necessary precautions. If you have a lifestyle which is very outdoor, sports activities, spending time
in the probably sun.
Protect your skin the way it requires. Understand the skin. There's also talk, lot of publications or not publications, people have different theories. Some say if you put too much of sunscreen, those like avobenzene, all these getting absorbed, they are carcinogenic, and so do not use sunscreen.
Mm-hmm.
So everything has its moderation.
Yes.
How much you use, how much to use, how long to use, mm-hmm. and the risk-benefit ratio.
Absolutely.
So are we at a higher risk among different population? If we don't use sunscreen, are we at a higher risk of getting skin cancer? Or we, if we use more sunscreen, do we get other cancers?
Yes.
So
yes.
It's a very relative subject, and I think it varies with skin types. So at early age, very healthy lifestyle, very good skincare routine to follow. This will be the basic to age gracefully in the future.
Absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned this briefly. So let's move from the 20s to the 30s. Call it stubborn or call it whatever. I refused Botox till maybe a couple of years ago. I said, okay, fine. You're in your late 40s, RC, you need to do it. But I had friends who embraced, treatments in their 30s itself. I mean, it's true. I've asked this question before, and I still ask it with a little bit of a healthy dose of skepticism. Is there really something called preventive Botoxes?
No. I understand what you want to... when you say preventive Botox, is the reason behind it is because if we animate our face, we are likely to get wrinkles.
Lines, yes.
So animate less, so less likely to get wrinkles.
Yes.
So you put Botox before. But that's only if we do not maintain the skin properly, right? So instead of saying do preventive Botox, I would say maintain a healthy skin.
I love that.
So maintain a healthy skin, which is very important. And
live your life, man. Animate away.
and when it gets to a point where you can't maintain it and there are signs of aging showing up, then you take whatever that needs to be done.
I think I intuitively followed that because I was like, you know, you obviously it's also about you start certain habits, you need to be able to continue them. And I just was like, if I'm going to start in my 30s, and I mean, I hope I live till my 80s. I'm like, for 50 years, every 6 months, I have to go to a dermatologist's office to do that. It was literally overwhelming me. And of course, me being the rebellious me, when I started it, I did it. And I was like, let me see what happens. And I let it go for 1 or 2 years. And I was like, huh. Okay, and I found my own sweet spot. I refuse to believe every 6 months, like clockwork, I need to be.
Absolutely.
You know, I was like, I'm going to see when I notice where I used to be, which made me want to get Botox in the first place, and then I will go. It's not going to be a calendar reminder or something like that. Those are the things that annoys me with the industry, where they say, oh, preventive Botox. If you choose to do that, that's more power to you. There's nothing wrong with that. At the same time, reminders, it's not a dental cleaning. It's not like every 6 months you need to go get your teeth cleaned, like go get your Botox. That's the, you know, issue I take with the industry.
No, I really agree with you, RC. I had a few days ago, I have a young, beautiful 16-year young school kid who...
What is she doing in your office at 16 years of age?
She felt... that she's heard or read from the media. She's heard a lot of people from her school friends saying that if you take intravenous glutathione, the skin will rejuvenate and look brighter and youthful. And so it's very important that we don't spread wrong ideas to young
Absolutely.
Children.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm going to just say it. I kind of feel the whole healthcare industry has taken depigmentation and has reworded it as brightness, and they are selling it.
Absolutely.
And it irritates me. Why are we still going after this fair and lovely days or, you know, all that nonsense? And they're like, oh, look at my skin. It's so bright. I said, no, you just wanted it lighter. You're just, you know, catering to the white skin mythology or whatever like that, you know. And I just, this brightness irritates me more than anything.
So they understand it. They're young minds, right? So
of course,
they
yes.
understand it differently.
Yeah.
What they perceive is actually, I would say, that child did not mean what she was saying.
Yes.
She just meant that, okay, if I take IV glutathione, probably I'm going to look more attractive. That's all.
That's all. That's all her mind goes to. Yeah.
She understood her what she thinks is, okay, if I become, well, the skin glows, I will look attractive. Or if I become fair, I will look attractive. So people come with this myth and starting at... So for me, it's more than giving intravenous some, even though it's an antioxidant.
Yes, just
giving
yes,
them,
yes.
It's like nothing is permanent.
Absolutely.
So most important for you to understand is nothing is permanent.
Yeah.
Right? None of the aesthetic procedure is, I mean, unless it's done for a corrective procedure,
yes.
like we do after multiple pregnancies, if you do an abdominoplasty
yeah.
or you do a gynecomastia surgery, then you don't keep repeating them again.
Absolutely. That's
but,
a different. We're not talking yeah. about
but
that at
other
all
than
here.
That, any of these procedures like a neurotoxin or a filler or an energy device or an IV, they all are, they give you some results for some
yes.
high time, but you have to repeat them.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's, the earlier you start, one, you need to know whether you're going to be able to maintain it,
yes.
right? Because you're causing certain whatever
changes
or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's very important. So when somebody comes into the clinic, the most important thing that I would like to understand is, are they willing
needs?
To maintain?
Absolutely.
Right? So
it's not one and done.
Yeah,
and
it's not one and done. Then why do it, right? Like, for example, if you take even a hair transplant, many people think, why do I have to take all these medicines? Why do I have to apply minoxidil? I will just do hair transplant and I'm done with it. For the rest of my life, I'm going to have scalp full of hair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's a myth people have, like the facelift.
Yes.
They thought that, okay, 50s, I do one facelift. For the rest of my life, I'm going to just remain, I've reversed from 50 to 40 and I will remain at 40 throughout my life. It isn't so.
Yeah.
We are going to continue to age. We can take whatever that is required to age gracefully.
Age well, yes.
And we can take measures to whatever has, if it has, skin has laxed and if there is a descent of tissue, correct it at appropriately at the appropriate age.
Absolutely.
See, somebody who's there are people who have lost massive weight, right? So that's, obesity
of course,
is
yes.
a big
yeah.
issue
yeah, yeah,
now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So at 20 and when 25 and they lose about 50, 60 kilos, obviously they become... Many of these procedures needs to be done at a much younger
Absolutely.
Age.
That is a different, completely different story, right? That is more of, they had a true disease. They were suffering with obesity. They have got it under control. Now they have to damage control from
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and that's a chronic disease. And they will be fighting obesity for the rest of their lives in whatever means or forms.
So
know?
These are two things. So you very clearly, beautifully explained that that's like a damage control measure.
Yes.
Similarly, if you take men or women as they age, women especially when they go through
pregnancy
and
postpartum, menopause,
yeah,
everything.
So
yeah.
anatomical changes that happens. Mm-hmm. So that then again, that's a damage control.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So these are very different.
Yes.
So
yes.
We are looking at damage control separately from trying to enhance or preventive, like you said,
yes.
preventive Botox.
Yeah.
So now, when we talk about it, and we're talking about beauty and lifestyle and cosmetics, so there are a lot of procedures, minimally invasive or non-invasive aesthetic procedures that are coming into the market as preventive measures to maintain, there's a thought process, I start them at 20, probably I can maintain myself at 20, right? So
okay.
that's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you see the revolution where We started using fillers, and we thought that when we put fillers, it goes from 1 cc, let's say it's from 0 to 100, and then it comes to 0. Then again, I put 0 to 100. Jesus. But it wasn't that way. There is some residual filler in some part of the tissue, and it's absorbing water, and that's why you hear the word
pillow face.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what happens is more common with the Asian, like I was saying, lower face, because there is a descent. We are not having...
Gravity is a very powerful force.
Very, very powerful force. Especially that shows if you're also losing weight, we don't manage our weight. So that remains another thing. So at 20 or younger, what's important is to manage your weight from a younger age.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So when we don't manage that, and we put on and then we reduce. And now I'm sure you've heard of the next Ozempic
face. Yes. Yeah.
So with all of this coming in, and we're losing a lot, and if you don't combine them with strength training and
protein intake and
all
everything.
Of that,
yeah,
we are going to have, that's going to, all those have to be addressed. So it's very, very important for us to focus now on a healthy lifestyle if we want to age gracefully, and select the procedures, not overdo these fillers, asking when to identify if it's just a descent of the tissue. And so we used fillers. So those days, the initial is when we didn't have all these threads or the other newer technologies that's available, endo lasers and everything. When we want to lift the descended tissue, we thought we will use fillers.
Yes.
As a like the fillers as pillars to lift the tissue.
Okay, interesting.
And that is why today we are now ending up with what we call pillow faces. And believe me, I'll tell you, yesterday I had a consult. So this patient actually consulted for breast reduction now, but a couple of weeks ago, couple of years ago, she's done breast fillers. So I do not recommend body fillers at all, because you need to put large volume, and we do not know, we still don't have enough studies to say if they remain for that long, what are the changes they're going to cause in the body.
Yeah.
And she had developed severe lumps and hyperpigmentation. And then I had to tell her, please get an MRI.
To understand where the fillers are.
It looks obviously she's got heavy breast and it's all lumpy, and people do body fillers not just for breast, even for buttocks. So recently, again in the same congress, I was looking at someone who was trying to extract these fillers. Like it was like they are milky white, like a pus. They were squeezing it out. And now I can imagine that when I... I'm going to do the same thing for her in the breast. Gross. And when we squeeze it out, we don't know where all they come out and how to put them tissues back to get the right shape. It's going to be a big challenge. So with all of these, you know, people want quick fix. They want... So what she was trying to tell me is, there's it's very popular in Asian side, the Thailand and all of these places. So it's quickly available. You have a party in the evening. You go and get breast filler because it's instant fix gratification. They don't at that point of time. They do not think about what's going to come later.
Do they think that it gets resorbed or something? Like, what is this? This is so not like makeup where you can put it on before a party and wash it out.
So probably there's some sort of an overselling too.
Yes.
They hear somebody saying, "Oh, I got it done, and it's quick, and there is no surgery, so you don't have to get scared." All of it. So they do not realize that. Yeah. So they just go and get it done. But we know that all of this
comes
the consequences. Unless certain procedures, of course, we have FDA, European
absolutely.
CE mark, all they go through certain tests, wait for publications, see what benefit, risks, and embracing these procedures after these are available, I would say is much wiser than just jumping into them because it's available in the market.
See, sometimes I feel like we are taking our face and these procedures a little bit for granted. We don't seem to evaluate the risks of all of the risk-benefit ratio calculation and think of it truly like makeup or something like that.
The media is also playing.
Oh, yeah, social media is the big hype. So I want to go through, you know, I might not have a very extensive list of procedures which are available. So help me out here,
sure.
Okay? PRP facials, do they work?
Yes.
PRP is the platelet-rich plasma. They take your own blood, spin it, take the platelets, and it's supposed to give you growth factors. And it's vampire face facial or something they call it, right?
Yeah.
Does that work?
Yeah. So the answer is, if it's PRP, that is, which means if it's a platelet-rich plasma,
mm-hmm.
there is science behind it to say that it can help in remodelation. So you basically create controlled injuries
okay.
with either a microneedle
okay.
or a derma roller or whatever it is. And then you apply these growth factors or you inject them that will cause collagen remodelation.
Okay.
Any damage has to be repaired, right?
Yeah, sure.
But preparing this PRP has so much of human variability.
So it has to be a good standardized protocol of preparation of the PRP.
Because otherwise it's just plasma.
They're just spinning something and putting it.
You take blood from here and you're just putting it
back. That's
so, so the answer is, if it's not PRP, it will not work.
Okay, fine.
So if it's rich in plasma, it will work based on science.
All right. Okay. Salmon DNA or salmon sperm DNA facial?
Yeah.
Is it the same theory like a vampire facial?
So again, here we are trying to put peptides or polynucleotides or whatever we are, everything boils down to growth factors
mm-hmm.
that whether they are human derived or derived from some other tissue, either it's salmon DNA or we are from plant also, you have all of this. It's all for I would say we are trying to remodulate elastin, collagen that we have lost and those reactive oxygen species that generated in the skin because of either ultraviolet exposure, blue light exposure, whatever, all of this for corrective. Yes, the answer is they all can help in this remodelation. But how much of these that are commercially available has the concentration, strength, and
it's
also
not standardized.
It's not standardized.
So it's like a world, like the Wild West when it comes to all these products.
Obviously. So you have hundreds of them. You have 100 companies producing them. So we do not know.
You can
tell me that you went to some place, you had a salmon DNA and you had a great result. Someone will come and say, I had no result.
Yes. Okay.
Because it's not the same products, same company. It's like, generally if some patients ask me, I'll say, you have different brands of makeup.
Yes.
Why do you have different brands of makeup, right? So there are some brands of makeup which use good quality of ingredients which are not harmful to the skin, and you may use it as many times as you want, still not harmful.
Yes,
we've heard of using lipstick having lead and then
cancer risk.
But now you also come. But now we are moving towards natural lipstick, beetroot
vegans
lipstick,
and beetroot
everything.
And
so similarly, is the what? So yes, PRP. If it's platelet rich, it will have benefit. Salmon DNA facials have benefit.
Actually have the salmon DNA and the right amount of salmon DNA,
will
be a benefit. Okay.
Yes.
So microneedling versus Morpheus.
So both are microneedles.
Okay.
Right? Only in Morpheus
you have
radio frequency energy added to the microneedling.
Mm-hmm.
So microneedle, they cause controlled injury.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at acne, it's an uncontrolled injury.
Okay.
The inflammation is uncontrolled,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you do a controlled injury and we help these, we adopt certain measures to form right amount of collagen to heal these injuries, you get better scars.
Okay.
That's the principle.
Okay.
So when you, the microneedles cause the injuries, the radio frequency helps to perform better collagen.
Ah, okay.
That's a difference.
Okay. So it's an addition. So microneedling,
absolutely.
And then you add the radio frequency
absolutely.
On top to get. Okay. So how about CO2 lasers? Because I see social media is filled with, they put the CO2 laser and you can visibly see the skin tightening, etc. Is it as gratifying result as the visuals look?
So we spoke about microneedles, right? So mm-hmm. a plain microneedle with radio frequency.
Yes.
And the radio frequency, depending on how deep the microneedle can go, mm-hmm. it can, the inner, and how much can you play with the adjusting the radio frequency. It will come with different platforms. Mm-hmm. You can either cause fat lysis or you can cause collagen remodulation, whatever you want.
Okay.
Now we are moving from that to the lasers. So lasers are earlier, like you said, CO2 is an ablative laser, which what we mean is, let's say we put, we apply CO2 on a 1 square centimeter area, mm-hmm. that whole 1 square centimeter you can burn it off.
Okay.
To a specific depth. Okay. Because laser has a wavelength.
Yes.
So you set to an energy, it can go to maximum depth, it will ablate that one square centimeter. Mm-hmm. But what happens, we are depending on the stem cells from the surrounding that 1 square centimeter to grow and heal it. Mm-hmm. So what happened in darker skin, in some skin, it was not there was long downtime for it to grow, and some areas did not completely grow
heal
back
at all.
And so you developed a hypopigmented or less pigmented spot, white spot. So then we decided we will fractionate it, which means instead of ablating that 1 square centimeter, we will put 100 rods in them.
Okay, so the neighboring tissue has ability to heal.
Yeah, so
better.
You don't, it doesn't have to come from the borders. You have the neighboring
enough
tissue will heal.
Okay, that
is when we started having fractional lasers. So if you have a small mole which is 2-3 millimeter, 4 millimeter, you just ablate it.
Okay,
then that's enough tissue from surrounding tissue comes and grows back. But if you have a large pigmented area, then it's better to have fractionated mm-hmm. laser. Now you must understand what we mean by fractionated laser is, laser has different tissue interactions. Mm-hmm. That is, when it is applied on the skin, it can cause different changes. Mm-hmm. It can be also used to create controlled injuries,
okay.
just like a microneedle.
Yes.
But then laser is light, which is absorbed by specific chromophore, and then it converts into heat.
Yes.
So then we call it selective photothermolysis.
Okay.
So that heat is what is actually causing most of the effect that we want.
Okay.
Like laser hair removal,
yes,
or
yes,
for
yes.
pigment. Now that same heat in darker skin can induce the melanin and can cause
hyperpigmentation. Okay. Okay.
So again, the same kind of device can have a better, so we may be able to work better, do differentiations with less complication in a type 1, 2, 3, or 4 skin versus 5, 4, 5
yeah,
darker
and 6
skin.
Not,
so it's not that we can translate the same protocol
for across
everybody.
The border.
Absolutely
yes.
not. So okay. that's something we have to learn. So laser has specific indication. So, and when we try to, and of course all our medical field, right, we
of
are constantly
course.
Trying to innovate something.
Absolutely.
So when we have a laser, we want to know what more can I do.
Yes.
How can I tweak the settings, or how can I modify this, what more can we do? So we are constantly trying to innovate. So we have different types of lasers, and all laser have to be absorbed by a chromophore or a pigment. So you have lasers where when it's oxyhemoglobin, if it absorbs, then you correct any hemangioma or
okay.
anything that is red.
Okay.
And if it is melanin, lasers that absorb my melanin, so any pigmentation,
okay.
Hair removal, we use
yes,
that
yes,
for,
yes.
That,
okay.
those lasers for that. So similarly, we have, if you want like carbon dioxide, CO2 laser is basically, it is absorbed by water.
Okay.
So in all skin cells, they all have water, right?
Yes.
Collagen, elastin,
yes.
all have water. So then it's used for skin resurfacing.
Okay.
So
it resurfaces the skin. Does it help in collagen production?
Yes, it can, depending on how you use. It also helps in collagen remodulation as well.
Okay.
So earlier, where if you look at 2-3 years, they used to ablate the whole face.
Mm-hmm.
It's like literally saying, if you put hot water on your face, how would
you
look?
Burn, yeah.
So the whole thing, and then it took 3-4 weeks for them
My
to
goodness.
Get back
uh-huh.
new skin. But then, because we want to find out less downtime and less complication, then the newer lasers came to the market.
Is Thermage radio frequency, or I mean, Thermage is another remodulation tool?
Yes, Thermage is radio frequency. So let me break this up for you. So we have four energies. So we have ultrasound, we have radio frequency, we have laser, we have electron muscle stimulation, we have microwave, or so these are the energies that are available for us to use in
facial.
Of course, one more last, cryolipolysis.
Okay.
So all these are available for us to use in aesthetic work. So there are different, if you take radio frequency, it can be a monopolar. Monopolar radio frequency is something like a Bovie.
Yes.
Right?
When we are cutting tissue in the
surgery.
Yeah,
so you have
surgery.
Skin tags and all of that. Yeah. Why do we use that versus laser? Is because
the
pigmentation issue is less in darker skin. So we use monopolar radio frequency. So similarly, we also use, monopolar radio frequency, you need an earth pad, you apply somewhere and it has to return back somewhere.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that is monopolar, right? Bipolar, so Thermage is also a monopolar radio frequency where we put a return pad and at some depth the radio frequency is given. So it can cause, the main purpose is collagen remodelation tightening.
Okay.
But if you have a very thin skin, it can also cause fat lysis.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
Right? So how you play with that energy will help you to sculpt your face.
Okay, okay, okay.
Now you have, the next one is what you have, bipolar or multipolar radio frequency. Is you have the needles going in and delivering the radio frequency in the handpiece that is there. You have the return pad taking it back there itself.
Taking it back there itself. Okay, interesting.
The multipolar is between the electrodes itself, the needles. Both to and fro is happening. So these are different devices that are available. What we are talking about is brand Morpheus is also a radio frequency device.
Okay.
And Thermage is also a radio frequency device.
So what I'm getting here is you really need to go to an expert to figure out what kind of device is best suited for your skin type. And this is not some random menu you can pick off.
No.
But that's how it's being served. Oh, Thermage is, this is the cost. This is not like, oh, I have, X amount of money and therefore I will pick this particular tool. It doesn't work like that.
It doesn't work that way.
You have to be evaluated, your skin type, your skin needs, what you're asking for, your age, hormone status. It's very in-depth and not as easy as it is portrayed or sold.
Definitely.
Right now.
See, we also combine energy. So you have Thermage, then you have ultrasound, that is high intensity focus ultrasound. But now it's even more moving towards different technologies. Right, it need not be HIFU, which you have heard
HIFU,
of.
Yes, HIFU, I've
right?
seen all
so,
the
and things. Different brand names. You would have heard of Altera. All of these are brand names using this high-intensity focus ultrasound. Then we have now endo lasers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have laser, which we deliver through a fiber below the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Right, again, based on the platform, you can lyse fat, collagen remodelation. So then we have the cryolipolysis, which freezes the fat. I'm sure you've also heard
of the CoolSculpt and the Kybella.
Cool Sculpting is a brand. Kybella is an injection.
Okay.
So we are trying to do a chemical lipolysis. So you can have cryo, that is fat lipolysis. You can have heat lipolysis, and you have injectable lipolysis. So for
there are multiple ways to skin this cat is what I'm
absolutely. So you're right. I think you bang on it. So what is our purpose? We want to reduce fat. How are we going to reduce fat? You have all of these available. You have little more, or you have more.
All I can tell people is you might reduce the localized fat, but if you don't lose your visceral fat, none of this matters.
We are also coming out with that.
Hey, does it cause metabolic effects?
So. Now there is a new device, which is, I think very soon it's going to be, I think it's already launched in some part of the world. One of the first devices, see the electron muscle stimulation, right?
Yes,
EMS
yes,
stimulation, which we do. It is like doing a cardio, right? So we are, let's say, do
I know, I've seen that. Does that really work?
It works. Imagine you're doing 1,000 crunches.
Okay.
If you do 1,000 crunches, will you lose weight or not?
I mean, you'll build muscle. I'm not sure you'll lose weight.
You
because
do also, right? Because you are also burning calories,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
The metabolic activity.
Yeah.
So, see, that the point here is whether every equipment that is available in the market does the job correctly.
Yes.
We are talking about technology and what it can do. We are not talking about which device using the technology will deliver the result.
Yeah.
Right? If the tell me if it makes sense. If that same crunches, 1,000 crunches can be done.
The same muscle is stimulated more and more, that muscle will get stronger, but there is no spot reduction of fat.
That is not for fat reduction. That is only for muscle building.
Okay. Yeah.
And you increase your metabolic activity, and because of metabolic activity, your overall reduction increases.
Yeah.
That's how it is. It is not for spot
reduction.
But you
have to do 1,000 crunches every day for a prolonged period of time to have a meaningful effect. But crunches cannot be your only form of exercise or only mode
that need not be applied only for the abdomen, because we apply it even to the pelvic floor muscles. So women who are suffering from vesicourinary incontinence, they're not suitable for a sling procedure or anything. When you want to tighten the muscle, we use the same energy.
Exactly.
So these are all, I would say,
applications available.
It's applications that's available. It's not like you said, it's not an a la carte of procedures where you just pick and choose whatever you
want.
This
is not like, I'll have this dish and with this side dish and this entree with this appetizer. It is not that at all. Because, you see people, I'm going to go to Korea or Thailand and an AI analyzes my face and AI tells me 50 different procedures. I think we will definitely get there, and maybe Thailand and Korea are already there.
No, but that I'm going to disagree with you. Because
it's scary.
Which AI will probably be able to tell you, this is my prediction.
Okay.
Let's say, because that's a subject that I'm really passionate about.
Yes.
So, if I talk to Arasi, I would if the AI can understand what Arasi would like to have as the eventual result.
Uh-huh.
Right? And if AI has the in-depth knowledge of what each of these energies can deliver,
mm-hmm.
and if the AI can say, okay, Arasi, this is how you are now, this is how
you would like to look,
this is how you can look, 5 different versions,
mm-hmm.
then you pick, I want to look like this. If it can predict exactly, if you actually pick this from the menu, you can look like this, or if you combine this with this, you can look like this. Probably if it we get to that
I
stage.
I think we will get there very quickly, the way things are moving.
If we get to that stage, then it solves a lot of problems.
Yes.
So you
yes.
can decide, okay, I want to be here. So it's more predictable when it comes to device and the protocols.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Right? So it's more, it becomes more objective. But when we will get there and how long will it take?
It's a long time. And how much it's going to cost us, we do not know.
We do not know.
Well, Jayanti, this has been a fabulous discussion. I learned so much, and this was a fun discussion nevertheless. I think, even though there are so many different procedures available, I love the fact that you started with be healthy, sleep better, reduce your have a better lifestyle, and actually healthy aging starts from inside. Yes, we have all these tools to help you, but it all starts from living a better life.
Absolutely. Thank you, Arasi, for giving me this opportunity. It was fun connecting with you after so many years.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you all for joining us with Reboot with Dr. Arasi Maran, and I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope we answered some of the questions you could have had about the different menus or options available. Again, there are many ways to skin this cat. Please go to a registered healthcare professional who has subject matter expertise in this area to get what you need, and don't go to random social media, whatever, and get messed up. Follow us at Reboot with Dr. Arasi Maran. And if you have more questions, please do leave us a comment. And Dr. Jayanti is based in Chennai, India, and she has Tavira Aesthetic Spa. And we will kind of put her connection details as well so that you can reach out to her. Thank you all. you so much for listening. If you found us valuable, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast app. And also, please consider leaving us a rating or a review, as that helps others find the podcast too. I hope you have a great week ahead.